Waidehi Joshi, at last. She explains in her BASEX podcast the science behind what computers mind. So let's all of us have a blast.
Just gonna move this. Good morning, RustFest. All right, okay. I know I'm the first one this morning. Maybe you haven't had your coffee. It's still early, but I'm gonna need a little bit more energy. Not for my sake, but also for yours. This talk will just be so much better if there's more energy in the room. So, good morning, RustFest.
Good morning.
So much better. hello, my name is Waidehi. Thank you so much for that introduction, by the way. That is the first time anybody has turned my name into a limerick. I didn't think it could be done, so that's very exciting. You've set the bar very high. Now I might have to just start requesting all my introductions have limericks in them. So I am super excited to be here. This is my very first RustFest. It's my second time in Paris. I still don't really know very much French, aside from like croissant and fromage. I hope I'm saying all these words right. I'm sorry if I'm not. I am an engineer that works at a company called Tilda, based in Portland, Oregon. And I work on a product called Skylight, which is your favorite Rails profiler. So if you work in Rails by any chance, cool. I wasn't sure about this audience, but that's great. You should check us out. Fun fact, Tilda was actually one of the first companies and the earliest adopters to use Rust in production. And we use Rust in our Skylight agent, and we love it. So, highly recommend, but probably this audience is already on board, so. but when I'm not working on Skylight, I spend a lot of my free time doing something else. I really, really love learning new things. And last year, I decided to kind of take this hobby that I have of learning new things to a whole new level, and I decided to learn something completely new. I decided to learn the fundamentals of computer science. And this was a particularly scary task for me because I don't have a CS degree, nor do I know very many things about computer science concepts. My background is actually in literature and education. It was scary because I didn't know where to begin. But I started this project called BaseCS, and it was a weekly blog series with a pretty simple goal. My goal was that I was going to learn one computer science topic and write a blog post about it every single week for a whole year, which that's like 52 blog posts times like who knows how many hours, so that's some complicated math that I haven't done, so feel free to do it. Good luck. and I actually did end up accomplishing this goal. I spent a whole year basically teaching myself computer science fundamentals and kind of creating a computer science curricula for myself. And yes, to answer your question, that all of you I'm sure are thinking, it was a very, very long year. And to tell you the truth, sometimes learning CS, as someone without a CS background, was really, really fun. Sometimes it felt super empowering because I was finally liberated as I finally understood all of these terms and concepts that people would use in conversation and that I didn't understand. And it was really amazing to finally have that light bulb moment when that concept clicked, especially when it was a concept that I had been super intimidated by, like linked lists or graph theory. But the other side of the story, one that I'm not always super keen on sharing, but I will share with all of you today, is that a lot of the time, learning was really, really hard. And I didn't talk about it a lot during the course of that year because I didn't want other people to feel disheartened in their own learning. But it was this omnipresent feeling of being intimidated and just feeling very daunted by all these things that I wanted to learn but didn't really know how. Honestly, the harder the topics got, the harder it was to find approachable resources that I could really make sense of. So this is a tweet from one afternoon about a year ago when I was feeling really, really helpless. I was trying to learn about a topic called radix trees. If you've ever tried to learn them, if you Google it, it might be a little scary because you find a lot of papers that use calculus, which I don't know why everybody has to explain it like that. But needless to say, it was very, very hard to learn this concept for me. And this was like over a year of learning CS that I, you know, hit this wall again and again and again. And the meme that I'm actually referring to in this tweet is the owl meme, which if you're not familiar with, is this. And I actually think, as I've been talking to a lot of engineers, I don't even think it's just CS that kind of feels like this. I think it's just learning any new concept, especially when you have very little context for it, can feel like this. So I wasn't really alone in that. But I think the most frustrating part of the whole process was finding resources like CS papers or curricula from MIT or lecture videos, but not really being able to make sense of what these resources were trying to communicate to me. A lot of the times I would read these papers or watch the lecture videos one, two, or three times and still not really feel like I understood what the concept was. And to be honest, it was super disheartening. And it took a lot of mental and emotional energy to get through the process of learning this huge amalgamation of concepts that I never thought I'd be able to learn. And a lot of the time, I felt very helpless. But a lot of the time, that's exactly what motivated me to keep going. I thought, if I'm feeling helpless learning this, I've got to stick it out, and I got to have some grit and try to distill this information so that someone else out there doesn't have to cry while trying to learn about radix trees. And yes, I definitely cried while I was trying to learn about radix trees. And then I made my own meme about it. I don't know if it works, but it's honest, I guess. But eventually, I did get through every single topic that I learned. And I did write a blog post about every single topic. And I got through the whole year. And I was very exhausted by the end. And that written series ended up taking on a whole new life. The written-based CS project eventually turned into a podcast, which I now host with my friend Saran. She's really fantastic. She also runs the Code Newbies podcast. You should definitely check it out. And shameless plug, I have Base CS podcast stickers, so if any of you would like one, please come find me after this. But it wasn't just a written series and a podcast. I also turned Base CS into a video series with the help of the content team at The Practical Developer, and they work on a website called Dev2. So through various iterations of my own learning, and through turning my learning from a written series into a podcast into a video series, I started to see that there was so much interest and demand in approachable computer science resources. And the fact that there was such a high interest in this made me realize that this wasn't just a problem for me. There were lots of other people who wanted to learn the CS fundamentals, but couldn't really find resources that explained these ideas to them in a simple way. And that year, last year, when I tried to learn computer science on my own and tried to teach myself all these things by myself, it was one of the most exhausting years of my career. But I also learned one of the most important lessons along the way. Learning new things, regardless of what they are, is very, very hard. It's honestly extremely hard. And if you've ever had to teach yourself something, as I imagine every single person in this room has, then you know this fact to be true. While I was creating the content for BaseCS, I started wondering, how do other people teach themselves new things? I wanted to understand how people learn. And part of the reason was that for this was because I wanted to understand how to make the best resources for the most people. I ended up reading a lot of papers on psychology, and the science and the history behind learning and education. And along the way, I stumbled upon the work of this guy. So, you might have heard of him. As you can see, he's got quite a personality. His name is Richard Feynman. Richard Feynman was an American theoretical physicist, and he created the field of quantum electrodynamics. He also helped develop the atomic bomb, and he won a Nobel Prize for his work in physics. He's also the person who was responsible for figuring out what exactly went wrong during NASA's Space Shuttle Challenger disaster. But aside from all of these things, he was also an author, a philosopher, an amateur artist, a lock picker, and of course, a bongo player. Because aren't all quantum physicists bongo players? But if you spend a lot of time reading about his life, then you start to realize that he did all of these extraordinary things in the 70 years that he spent on Earth. But the thread that runs through all of his achievements, whether they are academic or personal ones, it's not physics, it's not science, it's not even math. It's actually really this desire to learn and understand things, new things that he was unfamiliar and uncomfortable with. Richard Feynman was often called the great explainer by a lot of his fellow colleagues and his students. And he garnered this nickname because he had a truly unique way of teaching ideas and communicating concepts. Sure, he made a lasting impact in his field and in his industry, and yes, he did win a Nobel Prize. But I like to think that it was his work as a teacher that left a far greater impact on his field and on the world in general. Feynman was actually such a good teacher that he kind of had a reputation that preceded him. When he was giving his first talk as a graduate student at Princeton, Albert Einstein actually attended his first lecture. And many years later, Bill Gates would watch videos of his lectures, and he actually called Feynman the best teacher that I never had. In fact, Gates was so inspired by Feynman's work and his lectures on physics that he ended up open sourcing them. And today, all of us can watch them for free online, wherever we are in the world. But how did Feynman actually get to the point of becoming a great explainer? How did he himself learn new things? Well, I think in order to answer that question, we have to go back in time a little bit to Feynman's time as a graduate student at Princeton. So during his second year at Princeton, all the students in his program had to prepare for oral exams. And Feynman did something a little different than the rest of his colleagues. He didn't open a textbook and start memorizing formulas or try to cram information. No. He did something different. He went and bought a blank, fresh, empty notebook. And then on the top of the notebook, he wrote this. Notebook of things I don't know about. And then he set to work filling this notebook. He wrote down all the things that he didn't understand, things that he understood partly, things that he wanted to learn more about. And then he proceeded to unpack and deconstruct entire branches of topics that he wanted to learn more about, or that he needed to learn more about. James Gleick is a biographer, and he wrote a great biography on Feynman called Genius. And in it, he describes this process that Feynman had for his notebook technique pretty well. He says that in his notebook of things to learn, Feynman tried to find the essential kernels of each subject. Ironically, however, this notebook technique did not guarantee that he passed his oral exams with flying colors. He actually got one question wrong. So that just goes to show you, even Nobel Prize-winning theoretical physicists can be wrong and make mistakes. But at the end of these intense learning sessions, Feynman always ended up with this notebook of things that he was really proud of. So, okay, you might be thinking to yourself, that's all fine. We're not all theoretical physicists. We might not all end up writing these notebooks and changing the world, and you'd be right. But I do think that all of us have things that we want to learn more about and things that we'd like to get better at. And we all learn in different ways. And even if we don't end up playing the bongos or learning how to pick locks in our free time like Richard Feynman, there is one thing from his technique and from his life that we can pick up and learn from. We can learn how to learn and how to learn better. So these days, psychologists and educators and scientists refer to this mental model of learning as the Feynman technique. The technique itself is actually really easy. It's just four steps. And it's derived from that year at Princeton when Feynman started teaching himself entire branches of physics, which eventually led to many, many lectures that he shared with students around the world. So the Feynman technique can be summed up in just four steps. So let's walk through them together. First and foremost, this might seem obvious, but it's pretty important. We have to identify the subject, the thing that it is that we're trying to learn. We have to understand what the exact topic is that we're trying to learn more about before we can go about studying it even further. And the best way to do this is to write down everything we know, which is basically what Feynman himself did too. We should write down everything that we know about a topic, and as we learn more things about it, add to that repository of knowledge. Next, once we've written down everything that we already know about something, we have to take all of our knowledge about it and try to explain it to someone who's unfamiliar with the topic. So, psychologists and educators alike say that for best results, you should try to explain or teach the topic as if you were teaching it to a child. And the reasons for this are actually pretty interesting. So this is beneficial first because it forces us to speak in plain and simple terms. This might make sense because children are probably not likely to understand complicated terminology or fancy jargon. Feynman actually once said that when we speak without jargon, it frees us from hiding behind knowledge that we don't actually have. In his own learnings, he realized that by forcing himself to explain things without relying on jargon or terminology as a crutch, he started to realize when he actually understood how something worked versus when he understood what something was called. And those two ideas are very, very different. A lot of the times, Feynman noticed, and educators have noticed this as well, we think that we understand something, but what we really understand is the word or the term to describe it, not really the underlying ideas that fuel a concept. By forcing ourselves to explain something simply, we are pushed to get to the heart of what is going on within a concept. Another benefit to explaining things as if you were explaining them to a child is that it forces us to also be brief. Brevity, if you've ever hung out with children, or those of you who have children in the audience, you'll know, is pretty important when you're talking to a child because they don't have the attention span for long, winding, wordy sentences. So this kind of explanation forces us to be creative. It forces us to be concise, but also understandable. And this is actually where we have a few tools at our disposal. So drawings can actually be pretty helpful here, and Feynman knew this too. One of the most famous drawings that he created, and one of the most important tools in his tool belt, was diagrams. And this is actually a great example of that. It might look funny to you at first, but this is actually the Feynman diagram, which he used to describe the interaction between electrons as well as particle movements. And Feynman diagrams are now some of the most well-known explanations for particle physics. But at the time when he created this, it was pretty strange because most people hadn't used squiggly lines to explain the relationships between particles. But it worked pretty effectively. A small aside, in my research of Richard Feynman, I learned that he actually had Feynman diagrams drawn on his van, and he would like drive around Caltech with these Feynman diagram vans. And just in case you couldn't recognize which car was his, he also had a license plate that was memorable, Quantum, because he had a great sense of humor, and he was a huge nerd, and I guess what else do you expect from a quantum physicist? But anyways, I digress. Back to the Feynman technique. So once we've used simple terms to explain our concept, it's likely that we'll notice that there are actually gaps in our knowledge. Because as we go to explain something simply, if we don't really understand it, we're not going to be able to communicate it and teach it in simple terms. And this is where step three comes in, and it's arguably the most important. We have to identify gaps in our knowledge. This is where we realize the things we do or don't know. And this is the time when we go back to the books, to the resources, to the blog posts. And truly, it's where the actual learning happens. If we don't really understand how to explain something simply, then we won't get very far because we don't really know the key points of a concept. Finally, when we've cycled through resources and we've honed in on our knowledge of a concept or a topic in the process of trying to teach it to others, well, we're finally ready for the last step, which is step four, where we have to organize and simplify all of our knowledge into a narrative in order to explain it to other people. And in Feynman's case, he would use all of his knowledge and kind of construct a story and then explain a concept using a story in order to really communicate the ideas of how something worked. So when he used this technique when he was teaching or giving lectures, he would use simple sentences for storytelling. And this was pretty effective. And a great example of this is how he described how atoms worked in a single sentence. So see if you can try to find the simple sentences and the concrete ideas that he's explaining without using jargon. Feynman said, "All things are made from atoms, little particles that move around in perpetual motion, attracting each other when they are a little distance apart, but repelling upon being squeezed into one another." And Feynman also used analogies in order to make storytelling more impactful. He used analogies to take concrete ideas and communicate them to other people. My favorite example of this is a lecture that he gave in the early 80s. If you Google it, it's the Computer Heuristics Lecture, and you can watch it online. And he's basically describing what a computer is. And he describes it as a glorified, high-class, very fast, but very stupid filing system. Which, like, even today, many, many years later, this analogy still holds true. And it's a very, very simple analogy, and he tells it in, you know, this narrative arc of how a computer works in the context of this filing system. But it's actually very simple. He's using simple terms to communicate an otherwise really complicated concept. And I think the Feynman technique is powerful for very many reasons. But the reason I wanted to share it with all of you today is that it's particularly important, I think, for programmers. And the reason for this is that it forces us to test our own understanding. And it simultaneously challenges whatever assumptions we think we might have. And as many of you in this room might know, we tend to make a lot of assumptions, and then it's good when, you know, things force us to check them. And by this, I don't just mean assumptions about a topic, but also assumptions about what we do or what we don't know about something. In software and in computer science, and just generally in code, the first and possibly largest hurdle about solving any problem is understanding what you don't know. It's understanding the constraints of a topic, the bounds, the limitations of something, including your own knowledge. And this technique really forces us to confront these facts head on. Because only when we're able to acknowledge the gaps in our learning and in our knowledge can we really start filling those gaps. Feynman famously once said that I'm smart enough to know that I'm dumb. And I think this is a really good example of how his technique was pretty self-compassionate in a lot of ways, especially when you're learning something new. The Feynman technique makes learning just a little bit easier because you're constantly reinforcing what you do know along the way, which can be super helpful when you're feeling very disheartened or lost about a new topic that you're learning. You end up, you know, with a filled notebook possibly, or a log of all the things you do know, and then you understand how to target your learning and understand how to grow in whatever topic it is that you're trying to improve upon. But there's an even bigger reason why I think programmers in particular should use and could benefit from the Feynman technique. And that's because it teaches us to be better explainers. By reframing our own mental model for learning into the context of explaining to others, we actually start to realize far more quickly where our own gaps are when it comes to our own teaching abilities. Feynman was known as the great explainer because before teaching any topic, he would distill it down into its simplest parts. And if he couldn't explain it simply, he would go back and try to understand so much more about the topic, because that meant that there wasn't enough knowledge in order to explain a concept simply. His true brilliance really came, in my opinion, from the fact that he could explain anything and make everything accessible along the way. And some of the lectures that he gave at Caltech, he actually specifically geared to students who had no background in theoretical physics. In 1964, he delivered a series of 7-hour-long lectures at Cornell, which were recorded by the BBC, and you can watch all of these lectures for free. And in all of them, if you watch even a little bit of them, you'll see that he doesn't use theoretical jargon or mental gymnastics that a lot of other educators or teachers probably would have used at that time, and maybe even today. And those lectures are now the basis for the foundations of physics in lots of physics programs in universities all around the world. More than his contributions to physics and science and math, Feynman's technique and his life's work shows us that making knowledge accessible opens doors for others. He opened the door for a lot of non-academics and got people interested in science and technology and engineering and math. And he helped people who thought that they weren't good at certain topics feel like these were things that they could actually understand. And I think that this is particularly important in our industry because tech needs more great explainers, just like Richard Feynman. Tech is becoming more complicated and ubiquitous, and it's more important now than ever for everyone to understand how it works. People tend to fear what they don't understand, which means that a lot of tech is scary to people that aren't in the industry right now. So we need more approachable resources in order to get both creators and consumers of technology to understand how these tools really work, as well as what they're capable of. And when people can see it as a less daunting thing, then they're more likely to enter the field as well. And by opening tech up to more people, the tech industry in general will become inherently more diverse. If we can reach people who are traditionally underrepresented in our industry, then we can help bring new, fresh, diverse voices into the field. And through accessible resources, people who don't have access to a computer science education or might not have a CS degree can still get access to the knowledge that they need. And this would mean that we'd also reach all those people who want to learn something more but are struggling to find the right resources. If everyone in our industry started working towards becoming a better explainer, we'd have ultimately a much wider variety of explanations. For example, if there had been a better explanation of how radix trees worked, then I probably wouldn't have cried when I tried to learn about them last year. And if everyone made teaching a part of the learning process, then grasping new concepts would probably be a whole lot more enjoyable for all of us. But of course, it's not all selfless. Learning new things is empowering for yourself, just ignoring the rest of the industry if you'd like. Learning keeps you in the loop about what's happening in a field, and it makes it easier when you want to learn a new tool or framework. For me, learning the fundamentals of computer science meant that I stopped being afraid of abstractions, and I stopped being as afraid to look into the source code of how something worked. And I stopped seeing things as magical black boxes because I started to understand the little pieces and the little concepts, the building blocks of how things worked as a whole. I started to see parts of the whole. And all of this made me far less afraid of changing my code, and I think it's made me a better programmer at the end of the day for it. So, there's one last question in that case. How can each of us become great explainers? What are concrete ways that we could do these things to contribute to our own industry? Well, if we create our own repositories of accessible knowledge using the Feynman technique, then that can look like a lot of different things. And I'm not saying that anybody should go and record hours of lectures. It's probably okay if we had fewer of those. But for some of us, that might mean writing a blog post, or for others, it might mean adding some much-needed documentation to a project where information and knowledge is really lacking and inaccessible. And for others still, that might mean pairing with a new engineer on the team in order to communicate and teach the concept that you have recently learned to make it just a little bit easier for them. If we all did this, then we'd create something that would last so much longer after we've initially put it out into the world. We'd save so many future generations the pain and the time of learning something without resources. And maybe, just maybe, we'd even keep some folks from getting so frustrated that they end up leaving the industry altogether. As Feynman's life and his work showed us, making our own knowledge accessible can have amazing, lasting impact. If we were all better explainers, then ultimately, I think we'd leave the industry much better than when we found it. And to me, I really can't think of a much better contribution than that. Thank you.